Remember the first time you saw a race car on an open trailer? Maybe it was full of dirt, tire marks, and other battle scars. You wondered where it had been, and more importantly, where it was going next. Every open trailer has a story, and we're here to tell it. Welcome to the Open Trailer Podcast. You ever sit at the racetrack, hear the race announcer, and think, what the hell is this person saying? Like, are we even watching the same race? Are we at the same event? Is this guy blind? At one point, the answer is yes for Mark Thomas. Mark will tell you the story on how he was once a legally blind race announcer and where that all happened. Matter of fact, Marco has a ton of Oxford stories. We get into that. Also, what happened to Marco? I mean, not now. We know that he's back with Granite State, and he talks about his 2024 plans with race announcing, too. It's good news if you're a Marco fan, but I'll let the podcast do the talking on that one. Like, Marco just flat disappeared. It's very hard, especially in social media age, to just completely disappear. Radiohead has a song called How to Disappear Completely. Marco deserves the co-write on that one, because in the racing world, he did. Even though he will tell you that he did pop up from time to time, and technically he's right. Obviously, it's his life and he lived it. But for the most part, people wondered where he was, and they were genuinely concerned about his well-being, because there were some rumors about his health. He clears up a lot of that in stage number three. It's a very revealing one, too. There are parts that we get into, especially at the end, where technically the interview was done. Some of the best conversation happens when the microphones are... It's not that I turned them off. He obviously knew that we were still doing it, but it wasn't really... It was just post-interview bench racing, if you will. But some good stuff came out of it, and we end with probably the most Marco story of them all. So it's a pretty short episode, but it will be the final one of the season. Open Trailer will be back for season four, likely in January, so it's going to be a very quick turnaround. I've really enjoyed doing season three. I've enjoyed this entire process has been very rewarding and extremely fun. You know, we're not going to have the long delay that we had, especially between seasons two and three. This one's going to pick right up very, very soon. It's certainly going to be on before we do our off-season invocation. Teaming up with Black Flag Podcast for the first of its kind off-season event celebrating local podcasting and just racing off-season. It's going to be at Eric's Church, Good Times and Bad Dancing. That's Route 302 in Windham. It'll be an early Thursday night, so right after work. If you get to work on Friday, cool. We'll have you out by 8:30 if you want to stay later and party with the BFP boys and do karaoke with Jake, which is a ton of fun, too. You're going to enjoy it. It's a free event, 18+, and it is the off-season invocation. If you are a Patreon member, we'll get you a little VIP access, but more on that as the time wears on. But I wanted to get that message out there because I won't be able to deliver it in the next couple of weeks. But tell everybody, February 8th, a Thursday night before the BFP guys go down to Speed Weeks, you know, it's going to live on its own island because it isn't a holiday party. There are a few of those that are going on now at the recording of this episode. But you know what? It isn't quite race season. It isn't a holiday party, but it's somewhere in between. February 8th, a Thursday night, 6:30 to 8:30. Open Trailer Trivia, BFP doing their show, and podcasters supporting podcasters and really coming together as a racing community. A free event, 18+, Eric's Church, Route 302 in Windham, Good Times and Bad Dancing, and a hell of a karaoke show after we wrap up at 8:30 or so. Before we get into today's episode, I wanted to at least take a moment and recognize the loss of one of our good friends in the racing community. I was going to say local, but I mean, the guy was all over the place, whether it was Maine, New Hampshire, Massachusetts. He was so well revered that at the Snowball Derby, they actually had a space set aside for him based on all the shots that he was able to get for not only that event, but just it's one thing to be amazing at your job. It's another thing to be that and an even better human being. I know we were all better off for knowing Jamie Williams, who, you know, we've all shared our Jamie Williams stories through social media, and it's been very heartwarming to see the response on that, and just the measure of a man is how he's remembered, and he's certainly been remembered quite well. You know, one story that comes to mind, I mean, we all had our Jamie Williams stories of times that we spent together. This one wasn't one that we did. However, it just shows how dedicated Jamie was to the racing community and how we seek each other out. So I'm doing radio in Fort Myers, Florida, at this place called The Hog, which is a ridiculous name for a radio station. I mean, I know I work for The Wolf, but it's different. And The Hog certainly fit his... I mean, I have no ground to stand on. I work for a station called The Bone as well, and that's even far worse. I'm down in Florida on The Hog, and I hear from Kristen Smith. And Kristen said one of the highlights of the trip for Jamie was being down in Fort Myers, or being down in Florida for the Snowball Derby. I don't know if he got lost, because Fort Myers is a long way from Pensacola. But the point is he thought it was cool that he could be in Florida and hear someone considered local. I had since moved to Florida, obviously. He was listening to the show and enjoying it. I always thought it was cool that he sought that little radio station out, and not only did that, but texted a fellow friend, a fellow race person, Mainer, that he's down in Florida and connecting with people from Maine, doing just driving around and having fun. But there was something about that story which I thought was... I don't know, it was worth mentioning. So rest in peace to Jamie Williams. His contribution, as I said on our Facebook page, his contribution to racing is immeasurable. And he always saw the shot before the shot. We are blessed, outright blessed. I know that's an overused word at this point, but Jamie Williams had a gift. We are blessed with a number of wonderful, extremely talented photographers in the racing community. I think Jamie was the first to come around of that ilk, if that makes any sense. We had certainly had a lot of talented people to come before him, but there's something about the photography community today, and I think they were all inspired by Jamie Williams. I think he, in his field, within our racing community, is extremely influential and will be for years, for decades to come. So that's certainly a great measuring stick on your contribution to something greater than yourself. Quick reminder that you can also support this podcast on Patreon, patreon.com/opentrailerpodcast. That'll get you the early drop and also some Open Trailer merch, which I'll work on getting more of. The new Open Trailer Podcast Studio, which is another reason why I'm taking a few weeks off, is I really need to organize this new space and get it ready to do some of the things I'd like it to do. The space I've been using now is a pretty large space, but this one, I think it even is more conducive to having people over and being part of the conversation. So I think that's going to allow some Patreon members to sit in and be part of the show. So I'm still trying to flesh all that stuff out. But patreon.com, Open Trailer Podcast, helps keep the machine running. For those who contributed last time, and you know, I sincerely apologize for the fact that I know a few people dropped off, and understandably so, in the gaps between season 2 and 3, because the reason why they dropped off is because they thought there would be more episodes. And that's completely understandable. Again, very small turnaround till season 4. Really enjoy what we're doing and going to continue to do so. With that said, let's get to it. It is stage 3, Mark Thomas, Open Trailer Podcast. Let's go. Dude, you're all over the place, as far as, racing paper stuff. I know you're working with Pass a little bit later on, but you also end up on TV with Mainly Motorsports, pre-Steve Perry. And you worked with Steve, too. How did that whole project come about?
Well, this racing paper gig never really made me a whole lot of money. So if somebody had a job that was racing-related and offered it up to me, I was going to grab it and... Mm. The deal with Crawford was he offered me a couple hundred a week to go sit there with him, and we used to tape the thing on Thursday mornings, mm-hmm. So I'll waste a half a day with Crawford for a couple hundred, have a good old time. And, you know, I think I can fake my way through the subject matter. And
I thought you guys did a wonderful job. You had a good rapport. But then John gets hurt, had his experience over there at Unity with a car ended up on top of him. And then the show's kind of in your lap for a little bit. What was that like?
Well, I mean, I was kind of glad that Perry wanted to, you know, come hang out and do it with me, because, like, doing it by myself would have really sucked.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, we just wanted to keep it going for Crawford and, you know, while he's recovering and stuff. And
how'd you and Johnny meet Crawford? Johnny Crawford.
He had rented the track from Ralph. And Danny Ayotte worked for him. Now, I got Danny's job at Speedway Scene. He came in as my helper when Bonesy quit. Mm-hmm. I got Danny's, you know, actually, I hired Danny to take my job, and I took Bonesy's job. And I basically met Crawford through Dan.
Yeah.
And Crawford was doing his own announcing. He called me up to do the big shows because he wanted to schmooze with his sponsors and not be tied to the booth all day.
Makes sense.
And, you know, I mean, that's how, you know, like then when he wanted to do the TV show, at first, I mean, we were going to, all three of us do it. Danny was going to do it with us, but Danny may have had a little problem that cropped up that prevented him from doing that.
Yeah.
I don't know if you remember that.
I don't. I thought you were just kind of being coy. What happened?
What happened? Basically, he got busted, had a little coke on him, and went to Sing Sing for a little while.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that's more than a little problem.
Yeah.
I thought maybe, like, his wife threw him out or something.
No. He went to jail for a little while.
Oh, okay. Well, fair enough. You know, so you end up, you know, working with Crawford and everything, and then you end up announcing for Pass. How did you and Tom, how far back do you go with Tom Mayberry?
Well, man, this one's going to get me in trouble.
Well, it's only going to get you in trouble if you say what's going to get you in trouble.
Yeah.
Just be free. A title listen to this podcast.
Well, first, I mean, I was friends for 40 years or more, maybe, with Norm Desjardins. You remember Norm?
I do. Great man.
Passed away recently. And Norman was the PR man at PASS in the early days. And I think it was, okay, so Pass went to Star. Now, Bob Weber, one of the greatest people that I ever worked for in any way, shape, or form.
Senior or junior?
Senior. Okay. I mean, I like junior too, but...
Mm-hmm, me too.
But, see, Weber Senior used to piss off, like, every freaking tour announcer that there was, because they'd come to town and Weber would tell them, my announcer's announcing the race.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Too bad.
Yeah. And, I mean, there were some people that were mighty upset. The midget guys, we'd always let the midgets bring their own announcer, but everybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, I did the NASCAR modified races. I did the Busch North races. The ISMA races. And there was a couple of ISMA announcers that were really, really upset when they found out that I was going to.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, and Pass came in, and it was the same deal.
Right.
And I don't know if you remember, in the early days of Pass, they used to time trial all the time, which is, from my perspective, a fabulous thing, because you can get everybody's friggin' sponsor and, you know, the crew chief, the whole nine yards. If you've got a car out there, two laps, you can get all that out.
As a race announcer,
yeah. So, anyway, Jerry Major was their announcer the first year.
He was?
Yes.
I never knew that. He was on this podcast, too, and we never talked about that.
What?
Jerry Major was on a podcast, on this podcast, yeah. Great, okay. Great man.
Well, yeah. And, anyway, he
That's right. You're right. Yep. Yep. Now I remember.
Okay. So Jerry, for whatever reason, they didn't appreciate him up in Canada. So Jerry needs a day off towards the end of the year, and Mayberry needs an announcer for Speedway 95.
Okay.
And he says, hey, will you go up and do that race? And, you know, my announcer can't do it. And I say, yeah, okay, I'll go up and do that race.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started recruiting me out. It was pretty much towards the end of the year. And then
this is 02? 03?
I can't even, 01, 02, I can't even remember.
Okay. Yeah.
And then I find out that, you know, like the Canadian tracks that were paying big money and big purses, and I mean, Mayberry is making good coin off those races up in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. And my understanding is the announcers up in Canada wanted them to bring a different announcer. So
then Jerry.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I did that one show in Bangor, and then they call me up and they recruit, you know, and I don't know. And then I say, yeah, okay, I'll do it. I says, but I don't want, you know, I mean, you tell this guy that you're replacing him. I don't want, you know, to be the guy that shows up there and steals this guy's job on opening day next year, because I had that happen to me. Because I don't know, this is the part we didn't tell you. I told you, like, Spence quit at Star, and they had that other guy, and then, and I finished the year. Well, Spence came back the next year. I show up on opening night thinking I'm the announcer, and oh no, Spence is here.
Oh.
So, I didn't want that to happen to Jerry.
Yeah.
And I told these guys, you know, like, you got to tell him. When we go to Wiscasset opening day next year, I show up there, and I could not believe it. He's coming down here. He's got his pass shirt on and everything, and, you know, and he's talking about this and that, what he's going to do during the day and everything. And, you know, like, it's all the other officials. Now, everybody there knows that I'm there to do his job. And, you know, like, and I'm thinking, the one thing I asked you to do was to tell this guy, so, you know, because I've been in this
situation. You wanted Tom to tell Jerry.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yep. And he had 6 months to do it.
Right, yep.
And yet this guy shows up on opening day thinking it's still his job. I mean, I felt pretty bad.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah. And so you end up, you know, working with Tom for quite a few years, actually, I believe.
You know, yeah. It's unbelievable how many times I quit that job, you know.
Really? Over what?
Just didn't want to do it. Too much travel. And, you know, I just, you know, all these, I mean, Nova Scotia, I'm neglecting my own business. I was running a newspaper there in the early years, right? And, you know, I mean, if I'm gone to Nova Scotia for 3 days, that's, you know, I'm not getting much work done on my newspaper.
And you're the only guy there.
Yeah, especially back, you know, like 10 or 15 years ago, like if you wanted to go to Canada and make phone calls, I mean, you'd be breaking the bank.
I remember.
Yeah. I mean, now you can, you know.
It's different. Pay 15 bucks, you're good. But
yeah, right. Yeah. But I mean, if I went up there and made the same phone calls that I made, you know, at the racetracks down around here, it would have been like 50, 60 bucks a night.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, but I don't know. But
yeah, I mean, so you, you know, you guys, you know, worked together for quite some time. And then, as I understand it, you had, you know, you had some health issues that you had to take care of. Can you care to elaborate on those?
Well, I mean, I did have some prostate cancer, and, you know, did some treatment and stuff like that, and I think that's pretty much gone now. And
that's awesome, man.
And then the last year before I got canned at Oxford, I was legally blind.
Why are we laughing at this?
I don't know, but
you're,
I mean, I
you're no, a race I, announcer, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, especially up there at Oxford, where you can't see the backstretch on a good day.
Right.
I mean, you know, like at night, forget about it, right? Mm-hmm. And then I'm up there, and you know, and I got cataracts, and I,
yeah, you know, you're a legally blind race announcer.
Yeah, and I can't even see the backstretch.
Right.
So I mean, yeah. So yeah, maybe I deserve to get fired.
Jesus. So what happened? What was the first of all, I mean, awesome on your clean bill of health, right?
Yeah.
Congratulations on that. That must have been a time where you really had to refocus on yourself.
Yeah, and, you know, and it was at a time where I had no racing job, so.
I think a lot of people, myself included, wondered where you went, you know, because you when you disappeared a couple of years ago, you know, there's when someone in the racing world, especially someone as you know, steeped in it as you, you can't just disappear. I mean, this isn't the mafia. Like, someone's going to, you know, I mean, well, it is the mafia. Someone's going to know where you are, right? And they're going to know what you're up to. But no one knew where the hell you were.
I was at White Mountain 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, okay.
When, you know, one of the tours would visit.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, but you were off the radar for the most part.
Yeah, because I didn't feel like going to Oxford and...
I think there's just genuine concern because people had heard that you had had cancer and they wanted to make sure that you were okay.
Yeah. I think I'm okay now.
Yeah, but you're legally blind calling races. How does that last? I mean, you say you quit a bunch of times. How does that last thing with Mayberry just not?
Well, I mean, the last thing there, you know, I get a phone call from Mikey.
Mm-hmm.
And, we're going to go in a different direction. The best thing is like, you know, like the same, I mean, it's like, it was like a repeat of the same call that, as described by previously mentioned Norm Desjardins there, of when the big guy called and fired him, it was almost word for word. And it was so awesome. And it's nothing that you did. It's nothing that you did. You just want to make a change. Well, it just happened to be, you know, like about 3 or 4 days after I told them how bad their website sucked and how, you know, I didn't want to write. Because I used to write the little post-race summaries for the Saturday night race.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, people are thinking that I'm writing this other garbage that's on there. I don't know who they had writing it, but it was terrible, the Wednesday night stuff. And, and I told them that if, you know, if they couldn't find somebody else to write, you know, the Wednesday night stuff and this other crap that they're putting on their website, then I didn't want to write anything because people are thinking I'm writing this crap. And I get a phone call a couple days later and I get fired. Oh, it's nothing you did. Yeah, it's nothing I did. Yeah. I told you the truth.
Yeah.
It's just like when I told you the truth about who the worst announcer in the history of Flow Racing was and the worst announcer in the history of Racing America was.
Who was that?
Mikey.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that. Yeah. Flow Racing. What's your take on streaming in the realm of short track racing, present day?
You know, I'm probably going to get hung for this one, but I think it's fantastic.
Okay.
And I, you know, and I spend a lot of money on it, and I'm very, very happy to be able to sit there and watch this stuff that I watch.
Why do you enjoy it? It's
racing, man. Yeah. It's racing.
Yeah.
I still love watching racing.
Yeah,
there's no doubt about that. Located in a very good place to see the kind of racing that I want. But
yeah, what's your present day life like?
What's my present day life like?
Yeah,
I waste a lot of time on DraftKings, and I waste a lot of time spinning vinyl records from 40 or 50 years ago.
What's the best record you own?
The best record I own, man. There's so many good records.
Which one takes you back the most when you put it on? When the needle hits that vinyl?
Oh, man.
You love the Grateful Dead, right?
Well, see, now you're going to... I told you I had like a couple thousand record albums. Huh?
Yeah.
How many Grateful Dead albums do you think I have?
Studio or bootleg? Because the Grateful Dead only have, like, what, 13 studio albums?
Yeah, I don't know, but I have one.
Oh.
I have seen them
right
dozens of times.
Did you go to Highgate with the
Dylan
show? Yeah,
I was at Highgate.
Yeah, wasn't that nuts?
Yeah. Yeah, I was at Highgate. I mean, most of the reason that I went to Dead Shows was because of the girlfriend I had between two that I married, she was a fan club member, and she had a good income, so
yeah.
You know, if she wanted to fly to New Orleans to see a show, then hey, we fly.
Oh, she wasn't making grilled cheeses outside the show to get tickets to go in.
No,
she wasn't one of those.
Nope.
But Grateful Dead, is that which Dead album?
Which Dead album?
Wake of the Flood?
Nah, it's American Beauty.
That's a good one. That's classic.
But you know, yeah, it's not exactly the go-to.
No.
You know, I mean, I
old country.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. I you know, yeah, old country. No, you know, it's kind of weird there that you know, like my taste in country runs kind of 90s, but I'm not a big country guy anyway. Other than like in the 70s, yeah, I guess I was a little bit of the Waylon and Willie kind of thing there because I had some friends that were country musicians in Vermont, but
yeah,
you know.
Are you a Grace Potter fan? She's from Vermont.
Nah.
No, you don't like her?
I mean, I just really don't listen to enough of it to really know.
Yeah.
You know, like there's a big, big gap in, you know, like what I listen to for music because I have to say, like, in the early 80s, I probably stopped listening to almost anything new for a while. And then when my kids were high school age, I started getting back into it because they were playing a lot of good stuff.
Well, you love the Dead. You're from Vermont. What do you think of Fish?
Yeah, Fish is okay. But
you like them?
Just, yeah, and I have zero records of Fish.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I just say, I mean, I, you know, it's like I'd go to the show, you know, more for the people than I would for the music.
Yeah, sometimes racing's like that, too. Like, you go there because you're friends.
Yeah, anytime I go to Oxford, it's for the people because, you know.
Hey, were you at the Grateful Dead show at Oxford?
No. I mean, I was on the property for a little while, but no.
I would have said that would be a yes, but no for you.
No, but, you know, like, the craziest one that I was at, you know, like, around here was the Lewiston Fairgrounds one back in the early 80s. That was a little crazy.
For Grateful Dead?
Yeah, they had Grateful Dead at the old horse track there.
I didn't know that.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. It was probably 2 or 3 years before Oxford.
Huh.
Yeah, it was, you know, it was crazy there in Lewiston for a little while.
I can imagine. So, you know, you figure you watch thousands of races over the years, right?
Yeah, I don't
know. So you know what question I'm going to ask next. Is what is the most exciting race that sticks out in your head that you have witnessed, either one as a race announcer or one that you just remember watching and going, geez, I really love this?
You know, the race that I remember the most is like Dion getting Karafis on the last lap in the 250 at Oxford.
I was young when that happened. I was at that race, and I remember it as a blur. You were an adult. Can you take us through the last lap of that?
I can't really remember much. I can remember that, you know, like lap traffic, Karafis just didn't make the right move.
Yeah.
Opened the door, David walked right through.
You still keep in touch with Dion?
You know, like I run into him at the race. He goes to a lot of races.
Yeah.
I do run into him and talk to him at the racetrack. And a lot of times when you run into Dave at the racetrack, he's with Bentley Warren.
Yeah.
Two for one there, you know. Always great to see the two of them.
That's wild.
Yep.
Is there anybody that from the present generation that you feel is a throwback to, you know, the 70s, 80s? You know, days that you remember, someone has exudes a certain driving style that you're a fan of?
You know, I'm going to get myself in a lot of trouble for some of this stuff. My favorite racer right now that's racing in our neck of the woods is DJ Shaw because he can do everything.
Mm-hmm.
He can build them. He can set them up. He can drive them. He can coach drivers.
Why would that get you
in trouble?
He's
a crew chief. I don't know. But
you're correct.
There's a lot of people that don't appreciate my friends from Conway.
But the thing is, like, people don't appreciate greatness when it's in its current moment. You know what I mean? Like, years down the road, people will look at DJ Shaw and what, you know, Matt Hirschman is doing these days and modifieds. You know, right now, no one likes him because he wins everything. And DJ Shaw, you know, ACT Championship, kills it in the modifieds, pass, has like five lifetime bans, but a bunch of wins, too. And, yeah, hey, wait a minute. Do you have a lifetime ban from Tom Mayberry yet?
Oh, I don't know.
To be determined. But, yeah, I don't think that greatness is appreciated in the moment. You know, and what DJ is doing and then the stats that he's really starting to rack up. And he's still pretty young, too. I mean, he's been at it for a while, but he's what, like 30 now?
Yeah, I think he's 32 or 33.
Yeah. You know, he's a good kid.
And, you know, like I said, he definitely knows what he's doing.
Mm.
And, you know, yeah, I like to watch him race.
Did he do any Granite State races this year?
No.
No. Are you going to be with them next year? Do you know yet?
Yeah, it looks like I will.
Nice. How many years have you been calling races now? Got to be 40 years coming up on...
Nah, I mean, like...
A little over 30, 35.
Yeah, I'm in the 30 range, but, you know, like you mentioned there, you know, I never looked for any of these jobs there, but...
Have you ever applied for a race announcing job?
No.
Never?
Never.
And you have called hundreds of races?
Yeah, I mean, I've never, you know, like, I mean, I'm not... I know people that send tapes all over the face of the earth looking for jobs.
Mm.
And, you know, no, I never even made a tape, let alone sent one out.
Yeah, but you've made all these racing papers. So what's your favorite racetrack to race announce at?
My favorite? You know, I'll say Star, when they had the skyboxes, was as good as it gets, if you remember. I don't know if you ever had a chance to get up there.
No, I don't think so. I'd never watched a race from there.
Yeah.
Why was that so great?
Just because, I mean, you were just looking down at the place. I mean, they're fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Well, they've roped that off now, I think. But
yeah,
why?
Yeah, you can't get, I mean, but there was a tower up there that was even.
Is that where you used to work from?
Yeah, yeah. The upstairs at Star, yeah, that back in the day.
Yeah.
And, my favorite place to announce races at, as far as the crowd goes, was Scotia Speed World.
Really?
Yeah.
Just because the fans are nuts over there?
Yeah, yeah. They actually, you know, I mean, they'd come up to me and talk to me and, you know, compliment me, whatever. Now, I can't figure it out because, frankly, I mean, I'm not all that impressed with my own work, believe me.
Yeah, well... I don't know. There's a lot of people that disagree. I'm one of them.
Yeah.
We're all Marco fans.
Yeah.
Who else is going to have... You have a stamp that no one else has. You know, it's kind of like... It's like Carlos Santana. I'll put it this way. So Carlos Santana, he plays two notes on a guitar. And you instantly know it's Carlos Santana. You crack a mic. You say two words. Everyone knows it's instantly you. That's something. That's a talent.
Yeah.
That's impact. You still like it?
Yeah, I mean, I do have a good time doing it because, you know, I'm watching a race. I mean, what's wrong with watching a race, you know? I mean, it's what I want to do, and nothing's better than watching a race.
Awesome, man. I think that's a great way to leave it. I appreciate your time today. Anything else that you feel that we should have covered that we didn't cover?
You know, I don't know, because, like, I could give you a massive editing job.
I got time.
Yeah. I don't know, like...
Because I think I tried to cover everything that I at least know, and I've asked a few people, like, you know, I was like, hey, you have a good Marco story? What do you know about Mark?
Nobody knows anything.
Well, they do. Everybody has their own little story to it, and I'm like, well... That's cool, but I'm trying to get stuff that's going to be, you know, going to go in the podcast and sound good. But I think we covered everything.
Yeah. It's like, yeah, one of my favorite moments ever, though, was, you know, when Perry had to discontinue that friggin' favorite announcer thing when my friend stuffed the ballot box. I was even pissed off about that.
Oh, well... when he had the race show?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
He had that because, like, the next year he had all the Mainly awards. Notice here, he dropped that one. He wasn't going to do that again.
I know he did hell of a good.
I like, put, like, no effort into this at all, you know what I mean? I just show up and turn the microphone on. And, and that's it. So, I seriously can't consider myself to be, like you guys that take it seriously.
Right. Oh, you mean like me?
Well, no. It's not just what?
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of guys that take it a lot more serious than I do.
Well, right, like Joe Koss.
Yeah, no, I love working with Joe.
Yeah.
But he's all in, man.
Yeah.
Like, that dude's intense. I've learned a ton from working with him.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all the backgrounds of these people there, too, so radically different. Some of them, like Peter, like you just work for him. Peter's done, like, every job there is in racing.
Yeah, his whole family's, they're entrenched in it.
Yeah. I mean, I can remember I went to Westboro back. Now, they were leasing the place out. It was back. His father still owned a racetrack, but they were leasing it out, but they kept the concessions. And his old man used to run the beer stand. And when I was down there, I was 17 years old that summer, like I told you, and moved down there.
Yeah.
And I'm down there selling programs, and old man Falcone's selling me beers all summer long. Never asked me for an ID
right,
once.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Didn't care.
Well, you're not driving, you're hitchhiking.
Yeah, well, yeah. But yeah. I mean, yeah, Westboro was fun.
Yeah. You know, Pete's a clue. I mean, there are a lot of classy people that do this job. Pete and Joe are two of them.
Yeah.
For sure. I've really enjoyed
it. And then, can we talk about announcers that I think suck just because of their attitude?
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to ask you, is there anybody like in Maine that annoys you?
That annoys me. Let's see. No, not really.
Okay. Look at me.
Yeah, I think that's just the period that a lot of people go through. I went through it, and I had to learn differently. I made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
I'm not proud of some of the things that, some of the opinions that I had 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And I think a lot of that has to do with the people that I was surrounded with at the time. I don't back away from any of the things that I regret saying. Because that was, again, just the environment I was in. I'm not that person today.
Because, I used to drink way too much when I was announcing, too.
Yeah. I mean, we all did. There are entire parts of seasons that I don't remember.
Yeah.
And I regret a lot of that I haven't drank in over 5 years, but I regret a lot of the times that I did, race announcing. I always kind of kept it together, but, in retrospect, I wish I would have remembered a lot more of that that I don't remember anymore.
The guys in Scotia knew me so well, they knew when they could start feeding them to me.
Yeah.
No, they did. Yeah. It's just like
three more races. Like, yay, we can do it. We can give Mark a couple of beers now.
Yeah. No, yeah. They just, they didn't want me to start too early because they knew it.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not proud of it.
Well, I mean, I could do it at Star, but.
Yeah. I should have faced a lot more consequences than I did. I'm thankful, obviously, that none of that stuff happened, but at the same time, I'm kind of,
Yeah,
I regret it.
I quit drinking for 7 years once. It didn't take.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I had to. I'd be dead now.
Well, I mean, I should go on another hiatus, though.
Yeah. Yeah, it never, for me, it just never gets better. Yeah. It always got worse, and it always got lower and lower. And
we talk about the other health issues, because I didn't go through the stroke part either, right? I had a stroke too, right?
Mm.
And when I had the stroke, I was in the hospital, and I had draws.
Terrible.
You ever done that?
No, I'm fortunate. I shook, but I never had the DTs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. And the nurses are in there squeezing my hands.
My organs were starting to hurt, and that didn't stop me enough.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, that's my truth.
Yeah. Yeah. My one, see, I've never had a DWI yet, right?
But, me neither.
But it's only because I got totally lucky.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was like, I thought, I sat there for like 2 hours in the bar without drinking, figuring, I'll get down below, right? And then I went down in, and I'm like a block and a half from where I live in Kennebuck, and I get pulled over.
Oh.
Right? And you want to hear about what pure luck is in certain situations here. So I got my lawyer is in the courtroom, and I go out on the front step of that Biddeford courthouse. right?
Yeah, oh yeah, I know.
And I'm out there having, I was smoking cigarettes back then. I ain't had a cigarette for a while. But so I'm out there having a butt, and the friggin' other lawyer's standing next to me, and he's having a cigarette. And he's looking at my complaint over my shoulder, and he says, "Who's your lawyer?" And I told him. He says, "Has he said anything about the wetback test?" He says, "Look," he says, "on the complaint here," he says, "it's as clear as day." He says, The breathalyzer was out of calibration. It's 17 minutes late. This is inadmissible. The breathalyzer's inadmissible.
Yeah.
And then my lawyer comes up about 2 minutes later. I says, "Tell him what you just told me." Yeah. And then my lawyer gets this big grin on his face, and I get plea bargained down to like a $200 fine for driving to endanger or something. And, you know, they let me go. But it was all just luck that somebody else's lawyer picked that off of my ticket.
Yeah.
I guess I didn't have a very good lawyer.
Yeah. Well.
That's what you get when you hire your kid's hockey coach for a lawyer.
Oh, man. As I said, that would be the best way to wrap up the Mark Thomas story. Thanks to Marco for, again, making the five-hour trip to do this podcast, just to sit down, bullshit, and record for a couple of hours. Greatly appreciated, and an immense honor to sit there in the same room as that guy and tell some stories back and forth. Stories that became stories I had no idea we were going in that conversation, but with Marco, that sometimes seems to happen. Obviously, don't have a tease for the next episode because there isn't one, but there will be a season four, and that one coming up in either January or February of 2024. So have an amazing holiday, and talk to you soon.